Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Dishing with Stephanie's Dish podcast. I'm Stephanie Hansen. I'm here today with my guest, Dan Pashman, and it's sort of a coincidence that you're here today
Okay.
because I just finished. I have a little TV show that I do here in the Twin Cities called Taste Buds with Stephanie, and I just did an interview and a segment with Ann Kim,
Oh, my old friend.
your old friend, who I learned mostly about. I mean, obviously, being in the Twin Cities and a woman in the Twin Cities in this community, we know each other. But the area that I learned about her the most was at a Sporkful event that you did a few years back. And I sat in the audience pre-pandemic, I'm pretty sure.
Right. Yeah. 2019, I
And
think it was.
yes, it was close to like where the pandemic was just starting to roll.
Yeah. I believe it was April 1st because it snowed a little bit right before the show. And I was like, this is perfect. I'm so glad that I'm in the Twin Cities and it's snowing in April. I wouldn't want it any other way.
No, because obviously Prince, sometimes it snows.
That's right.
But the best part about seeing you today is that you're going to be back on March 24th at the Amsterdam, which is where I saw you at 6:30 with Ann Kim again, recording another podcast. That's awesome.
That's right. But this one's going to be different because now Anne's going to turn the tables on me. So, that's one of the cool things about this. We've done a lot of live Sporkful podcast tapings over the years, but this one's going to be fun and different because I'm inviting guest hosts to basically sort of turn the tables. They get to ask me questions all about my new cookbook and whatever else. And I'm sure I'll have questions too. It's going to be a really fun conversation. But yeah, doors open at 6:30, show at 7:30. It's a Sunday evening. Should be a lot of fun.
Anything's Possible is the new cookbook. You have over 81 recipes that are pasta centric. You're the first person that I've met that was featured on Time Magazine's Best Invention of the Year for your new pasta shape. Is it Cascatelli? Is that how you say it?
Cascatelli, yeah.
Cascatelli.
Yeah.
Will you tell me
Yeah.
about it?
Yeah, so I mean, I invented a new shape of pasta. I mean, which is a good conversation starter at parties, I can tell you. Barbecues and all that. But yeah, I wanted to tell a big epic story on the Sporkful podcast. That was where it started. And I thought, well, what if I invented a new food? I'm sure there'd be ups and downs and things would go wrong. It'd be a great story. And if it's, and it would be a great story as long as it's very successful or if it crashes and burns. Either one of those would be good. But it ended up being so much harder than I anticipated. I decided to invent a new shape of pasta because I'm kind of dissatisfied, Stephanie, with a lot of the old shapes out there. I have these three metrics I came up with to judge all pasta shapes. So there's forkability, how easy is it to get it on the fork and keep it there? Sauceability, how well does sauce adhere? And tooth sink ability, which is how satisfying is it to sink your teeth into it? And a lot of shapes get one or two of these right. Very few nail all three. Spaghetti can barely get one of them. I mean, you can't get a good bite of spaghetti on a fork. It's either it's too much pasta or it's not enough. You got danglers splattering sauce all over the place. Then you finish the pasta and half the sauce is still in the plate. These are
Kind of how I
designed.
feel.
These are design flaws, Stephanie. And so I had the idea, like, could I do better? But it ended up being a lot harder than I anticipated. It took me 3 years. And my goal was not just to invent a theoretical shape, but to actually get it mass produced so that many people could try it. And everyone from all the people in the world of pasta to my wife that I talked to said this was a terrible idea. But after a lot of trial and error and setbacks, the shape launched in 2021 and it's now in stores across the country. It's called Cascatelli. It's a short shape with these two sort of spines of ruffles that stick out perpendicular to the main strip. And so, in between those two spines of ruffles, sauce gets in there and it cannot get out. It's got all different kinds of interesting textures, much more varied than a typical pasta. And yes, it was named one of Time Magazine's Best Inventions of the Year. It was featured everywhere from the New York Times and NPR and MPR to Access Hollywood, which was not on my vision board when I started. I did not expect that, but it was all pretty incredible.
So I think I've bought this because like it's being mass produced. You can buy it like Cremet, I think, makes it, don't they?
Well, so there's a version made by the original version is made by a company called Sfoglini, Sfoglini.com. So that's in select stores around the country. You can also order it online right from them. And there's a version at Trader Joe's. Trader Joe's has the Cascatelli manufactured separately. And then there's a gluten-free version made by Bonza that's in Whole Foods nationwide. So those are the
Okay.
versions out there right now.
Yeah, I must have picked it up at Trader Joe's then. That would make sense.
Yeah.
I had a bucatini experience this weekend that, like, we had a bucatini moment kind of during the pandemic where we sold
Yeah.
out bucatini all over the world. And I hadn't had it for a while, and I bought it and I made some fettuccine with it. And I was like, huh, this is just kind of, it's sort of chewy, sort of thick, doesn't really hold the sauce. It just felt like, oh, this was kind of a big waste. And it took about 10 minutes longer to cook.
Yeah, I've had a funny sort of arc within my relationship with bucatini, Stephanie. I started off being opposed to it because I feel like everyone says, "Oh, it's like spaghetti, but it's hollow down the center, so it holds sauce." But it really, it's such a narrow tube, it doesn't hold
No
sauce.
sauces in there.
That's right, and that was my I, so I kind of you know that's why I objected. But then, as part of my pasta design journey, I went out and just tried to eat every obscure shape I could get my teeth on and went back to some I hadn't eaten in a long time, like bucatini. And what I did realize that bucatini does do well, everyone talks about it holding sauce, which is, as we said, kind of a lie. But what it does do well is that it has a really wonderful texture, better than spaghetti because it's a hollow tube, but it's such a narrow tube that it has a lot of like sort of tensile strength. And so when you bite into it, it kind of springs back against the force of your bite. And that makes it a very satisfying chew.
I think for the right kind of sauce, I don't think fettuccine was the right sauce. It maybe would have had to be like a meat sauce or a bolo sauce, something just a little richer with more meaty texture, I think.
Yeah. In my cookbook, we do a bucatini with scallion oil, and like crispy fried scallions and crunchy raw scallions, and like a soy sauce and butter, like a light soy butter
Yum.
coating. And then you take a sunny side up egg, a runny egg, and you put it on top, and you break the yolk, and the yolk is thick enough to coat the bucatini. And you get the crunch of the scallions and the butter and the soy sauce and the egg yolk, and it's like that. I mean, my kids go crazy for that one.
That sounds like a fancy, upgraded, almost like carbonara situation where the egg then
Yeah.
makes the sauce.
I mean, fancy, but I mean, you can do the whole thing in less, in 45 minutes, and it has like six ingredients.
One of the best recipes ever is, and I think David Chang maybe invented it, based in his heritage, of course, but where you'd use the chopped scallions and then you pour the hot oil over it with the ginger and it
Right.
makes like a green sauce. Putting that on pasta is good too.
Yeah, that does sound amazing. I'll save that one for my next cookbook.
Will you do a next one? Because I interview a lot of people that write cookbooks, and it feels like there's either those of us that write it once and they're like, oh my gosh, that was so much harder than I ever thought it would be, or those of us that decide after they do it once, like it's almost like an addiction and you have to keep going.
I would say both. I feel both simultaneously. It has been a lot harder than I anticipated, and we're doing a multi-part series on the Sporkful podcast about the real inside story of the process of making it. Because I found that a lot of people, even folks who buy a lot of cookbooks, don't really know exactly how they're actually made. So we did this whole multi-part story that really, well, you will never look at a cookbook the same way again after you listen to this story. But so in that sense, it was very intense, and just the number of details. That's what's so hard about it, is that the number of details and the number of decisions. I mean, I've done a lot of projects over the years. I've written stuff, I've done podcasts, I've done video series and TV stuff, and all kinds of different styles and events. I have never in my 25-year career worked on anything that required this many decisions. I mean, starting with a decision about what salt to use, which is a very, which keeps cookbook authors up at night. Because even if you just say kosher salt, well, there's different kinds of kosher salt, and they're not all the same level of saltiness.
I'm
So,
dying of laughter.
right, even if you say in your cookbook, I use Diamond Crystal, if someone else doesn't read that, because not everyone reads every word of the cookbook, let's be honest. If they don't see that you said it's Diamond Crystal and they just see kosher salt and they reach for Morton, Morton is almost twice as salty as Diamond Crystal, and it could ruin the whole recipe. And I could take up 10 hours with the list of similar decisions, each of which feels like it will make or break the recipe that you're working on and determine whether or not people will have good results. So that makes it very stressful and makes me think like I can't do it again. That being said, I'm also the kind of person who just can't stop having ideas that I get excited about, for better or worse. So I already have ideas for like three more books.
Yeah.
Just going through the process once sparks so many new ideas. So I'm like, what if I did one of these? What if I did a cookbook like this? I'm already jotting down notes. I met a recipe developer last night at a party, and I was like, "We should work together. If anyone buys my, if anyone buys the cookbook I'm about to release, then we'll work together for the next one." So I feel both of those feelings simultaneously.
It's funny because if anyone asked me about the cookbook I wrote, like if what I my criticism of it is, it's exactly that. I love salt, so I eat a lot of salt, and I think I didn't salt my recipes enough throughout the whole book because I was so worried that my preference is so salty that I make some of the recipes exactly as they are in the book, and I think, oh my gosh, this just needs so much salt.
Right. No, and that's the other nerve-wracking thing about the process is that, every recipe in my book was tested by four different people, 5+ times total. But still, then the book goes to print, and I'll go back and cook a recipe, and I'll be like, ah, maybe it needed another quarter teaspoon of this. And so, you never feel like you got it perfect. And, every time you cook a recipe, it's a tiny bit different, even if you're following the same recipe in the same kitchen and you're the same person. There's always a little bit of chance. And so that makes me feel, then you're like, oh, I want to do another cookbook because like I can do it better. I won't have these questions the next time, but of course you still will.
Well,
But I think it's that kind of like never ending drive to get it just right, which is, you can drive yourself nuts a little bit, but it's also the kind of like the thing that motivates people. So in that
yeah.
sense, I kind of find it inspiring.
Now you're kind of a fancy guy. Did you photograph your own book or did you hire fancy people?
I don't think that those are the only two options, Stephanie. I don't think of myself as a fancy guy, but I did not photograph it myself. I hired folks to photograph it, but many of the props used in the photographs were taken from a junkyard, so that's not fancy at all, Stephanie. I wanted the photos in the book to be very, I wanted it to feel very lived in, very not fancy, so like a lot of the dishes have like a napkin is crumpled up or a bite has already been taken from the
Sure.
food. There's crumbs on the table. Like there's hands coming in and my kids' hands are in some of the photos reaching and grabbing for stuff. I wanted it to feel like there are real people behind this cookbook and
You're
real
on
people.
trend.
Right, and good, but like real people sometimes leave crumbs on the table
Yes.
and crumple up napkins and there's half of a sip taken out of the drink or whatever. So, I hope that people will find that the book is very accessible and approachable. Most of the recipes will take you less than an hour. I have a special section in the back that lists all the recipes that are 45 minutes or less, all the recipes that are
That's smart.
all the
Yeah.
recipes that are 5 ingredients or fewer. I think that there's a lot of dishes in here that will feel very familiar, but will kind of encourage you to maybe add one ingredient that you didn't used to put on pasta. Like maybe you're going to do kimchi carbonara. You're going to do cacio e pepe with chili crisp. You're going to do a beer cheese, a cauliflower mac and cheese. It's a beer cheese with mustard mixed into the mac and cheese. Great, and there's also a lot of instructions for how to make these dishes ahead, so that you can plan when you're having people over, so you're not stressed. So, I really went to great pains to try to make sure there's a lot of dishes in this cookbook that you can throw together on a weekday night for the family without stressing out too much, while also eating something you haven't had before on pasta and broadening kind of blowing your mind, I hope, a little bit and broadening your horizons that there's so much more that you can and should be putting on your pasta.
Well, you've hit on four distinct trends. So you're doing it right because you hit
Oh,
on
good.
cauliflower, which is a trend. You hit on authenticity of photographs and getting away from the whole whiteboard situation. What was the other one that you hit on? Oh, 5 ingredients or less. And then weekend project cooking, like that's kind of its own separate little category. So this
Right.
book sounds like you're going to hit it on all cylinders.
Oh, great. I hope from your lips to the cookbook purchaser's ears, Stephanie.
Do you have a huge tour plan, and is the tour in conjunction with Sporkful Podcasts all the way along? Because that's also part of the book, is you gotta then, go out there and shill it.
For sure, yeah. And I'm very excited to hit the road. I mean, I kind of always wanted to do a big tour like this. I've done sort of small tours here and there. We did our Twin Cities show in 2019, which was a blast. And so I knew I wanted to make sure I came back to the Twin Cities. I'll be in Chicago, Twin Cities, Atlanta, Miami, DC, Boston, Philly, Seattle, San Francisco, LA, and all of them in conversation with, incredible folks that I'm so grateful are coming. So, Ann Kim in the Twin Cities, as we said. Chicago, I'll be in conversation with the Korean vegan Joanne Lee Molinaro. In Atlanta, I'll be talking with Kim Severson from the New York Times.
Well, that's
In
cool.
Miami, it'll be with Carlos Frias, formerly the Miami Herald, great food writer. In DC, I'll be with Patty Hinich of PBS, who I love, and she's just the greatest. Boston, I'll be chatting with Dan Souza from America's Test Kitchen. Philly will be with Kehlani Palmisano at WHYY. So just a lot of really talented people that I'm, very, really appreciate that they're coming out and joining me.
I mean, if that's not reason to hit subscribe on the Sporkful podcast, I don't know what is. What are some of the like things that you're excited about cooking right now that aren't pasta? Like, are you obsessed with any ingredient, or are you finding something seasonal where you're just like, oh, I can't get enough of this?
I mean, I don't know. Well, I guess I would say I'm on a big shawarma kick. I love shawarma. And when you get it I've had it in Israel or anywhere in across the Middle East, and it's there are variations that span the region, and it's always phenomenal. There they have like a spit. So I've been interested in like what are some ways that you can kind of replicate some of the flavor and texture of that at home. So that I've just been kind of tinkering with different recipes, and I love lemon. I have lemon wallpaper in my kitchen. There's a lot of lemon in the pasta dishes in this cookbook. Regular lemon juice, lemon zest, preserved lemon. And so I've been doing this preserved lemon paste from New York Shook, which is available, I think, at Whole Foods around the country. You can get it
Yum.
shipped to your house. That as a condiment in the shawarma package with the wrap. I'll usually just do it with flour tortillas, and you get hummus and the preserved lemon paste and some crunchy acidic veggies. Oh
Yum.
my gosh, so good.
I just saw this on TikTok, I'm sure, where they peeled the lemons and then they dehydrated them in the oven and then they ground them up like in a powder, like you would make a garlic powder. So this is a lemon skin powder. And they're using that as enhanced flavoring in dishes. And I'd never thought of that or heard of it before, but it sounds kind of brilliant because so much flavor's in the skin.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm not familiar with that, but I'll be sure to check that out.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, this is really a cool idea I never thought about. Also, we're seeing a lot of shawarma, the sauce that's appearing in like pasta dishes, or I saw the other day someone that had roasted a whole head of cauliflower and put it in a shawarma type sauce. I think shawarma is having a moment.
Well, I'm here for it. I'm here for
We
it.
on our radio show, we talked about what vegetables are having a moment because we feel like in the Twin Cities here, carrots are like big. Everybody's big into carrots right now. I personally am ushering in the humble cabbage and bringing that back into the zeitgeist because we're getting a little tired of Brussels sprouts. Do you have any like vegetable that you're kind of obsessed with?
I mean, I've been seeing a lot of cabbage too. I'm with you on that one for sure. I've had a couple of really good cabbage dishes in the last few months. A lot of like braised cabbage in a broth, like a sort of like a I had one that was like a miso broth situation with a nice char on the cabbage, and then it's braised is so good. I'm not sure. I mean, I still love broccoli. I mean, to me, like when you cook it on a high heat on a sheet pan with get a nice char on it. I mean, just all the time. And then I'll often just cook a whole sheet of it have as a side dish at dinner, and then I'll have leftovers in the fridge. And if I'm working from home, one of my go-to lunches is the leftover charred broccoli in a flour tortilla with melted mozzarella cheese and chili crisp. So
Oh, yum.
you take the tortilla, you put the cheese and the chili crisps, you stick in the microwave for a minute so the cheese is all melty and the chili crisp is like sizzling and bubbly. And then you warm up your broccoli and you put that in there and wrap it up, and it's just like crunchy and spicy and phenomenal.
Sounds good. Do you have any brand of chili crisps that you particularly like?
I love Kari Kari, which I think is out of Seattle. That one is they just got a lot of crunch. I don't need my chili crisp. I mean, I like spicy food, but I don't want my chili crisp to be too spicy, because I like a lot of crunch. So I want to be able to really slather it on. So I'm a big Kari Kari fan, but there's a lot of good ones out there.
Can you've done a lot of amazing podcasts and you've interviewed a lot of really cool people. Nigella stands out as like, wow, she's so great in conversation. Also, you interviewed Rachel Maddow. What was she like when she's not talking about politics? Like from a food perspective, is she a foodie?
Yeah, I mean she's great. My first real job in radio was as a producer at Air America Radio, which was a progressive talk radio
Oh, I
network
know
that,
all about it. Al
yeah.
Franken was from
That's
the
right.
Twin
Of
Cities,
course,
and
yes. So the Minnesotans will know well, but I started there in 2004 when the network launched. I worked mostly on Marc Maron's show, and he's gone on to be a very successful podcaster. But I also that was where I met Rachel because she was at that time like unheard of, and she was working on one of the shows and as a newscaster. So we became friendly then. And when I launched my podcast, then she was a big MSNBC star, and she was nice enough to come on the podcast. And I was like, "What do you want to talk about?" And she said, "I want to talk about piña coladas." And she was, I think, still to this day, one of the very few, possibly the only, Sporkful guest who ever came on the show with notes. Like she was. That's and this is Rachel in a nutshell. This is how prepared she was. She's always in any meeting. You can't pitch her any idea that she hasn't already read about herself. She's like always the smartest person in the room. She's really amazing. And she showed up for the taping with notes on the history of the piña colada and why she wanted to talk about it. And it was the whole point of it. Her whole point was sort of like a lot of cocktails started off being very simple and pure, like the daiquiri, which is just supposed to be like rum and sugar and lime juice. And then it sort of got industrialized and turned into this like frozen, mass-produced slurry. And the funny thing about the piña colada was it was actually always gross. It was like invented using Coco Lopez cream of coconut, which is kind of like this corn syrupy
Yep.
canned concoction. So like from the day it was invented, it was kind of like always that. And so she had tried to create a new kind of piña colada that would be not
Gross.
not gross, and that would actually be like fresh and organic and a little bit lighter with the same flavor. So she did. So actually, I think the recipe is still up on Sporkful.com. It's called the Mad Owl Colada. You can like search it up,
I'm
and it
going
is
to.
phenomenal. It's really, really good. Yeah.
Because I do love a good pina colada, and I always end up resorting to the horrible syrup. And we're heading to the Caribbean on a sailing trip in the next week, and that would be a great opportunity to try a fresh version.
There you go. Yeah. Search it up. It is, you need to make sure you have orgeat on hand, which is like,
Okay.
almond syrup, the secret ingredient to a Mai Tai. It can be a little hard to track down. Not every liquor store is going to have it, but I've ordered it online. It's very easy to find online.
All right. Well, you have been just a delight. I can see
You
why you're
too.
so is so popular, and I feel like you're just so relatable and regular, which I know seems odd to say that to you, but sometimes we're in flyover country here, and we have a little bit of a chip on our shoulder about the East Coast, West Coast folks.
I understand that, but I lived in Chicago for several years. My wife and brother both went to college in Chicago, which I know is not the Twin Cities, but like
Close.
I loved the Midwest. I actually didn't want to leave, but I got my career, I got a great job offer in New York and I had to take it. But I have a lot of love for the Midwest, so I'm excited to be coming to the Twin Cities in March.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll put links for people to get tickets to the show. We'll put links to your cookbook, your chili crisp recommendation, your Rachel Maddow colada recipe, all of that in the show notes. Thanks, Dan, for being a guest. I really appreciate talking with you.
My pleasure. Thanks, Stephanie.
Okay, we'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye.